Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us, we have Daniel McAdams, our co-host, and we're ready to start. So we want to talk about a couple things today. One will be what they're trying to do to our campuses and making sure that freedom of speech is protected. We'll have lots of officials enforcing freedom of speech. But also, we want to start off, Daniel, with this $3.5 billion slipped into the Ukraine bill. I thought we rooted out all this slipping into to supercharge mass migration from the Middle East. I can't believe they would do that. But this is a big issue with the people in this country. And that is, what's going on for migrations. And the important point on what we're going to be talking about, the money, it's not just, doing something to protect our borders. It's just the way worldwide immigration is going on and why we are still involved in it. And it'll be a mixture of money, which is so-called non-governmental, but it will be money that the government and the people of this country cough up, and it'll be used worldwide. But ultimately, I see what they're talking about is facilitating, immigration to the United States. You know, nobody else is coming along, and it just seems like it's part. It's very easy for me to listen to the people who say, "Well, it's all a scheme." You know, and what they're trying to do is they're trying to cause chaos in this country, and they're doing a pretty good job on it. Then they open up the doors to immigration, and then they stir up all kind of fighting that we have to finance. And it looks like they can't be that dumb all the time. It looks like there's a scheme and a plan. And I really do believe that many people have, and I tend to agree with them, that chaos is a goal. And this has been known throughout history, because if you want to introduce radical socialism and fascism, what you do is you destroy the culture of a country, and then people feel desperate, and then they go where the highest bidder is. The offer, oh, we'll take care of you, we'll take care of you. Well, I would say that we're making progress in exposing them, but I tell you what, the opposition is still making a lot of progress in trying to create the chaos in this country that is very, very dangerous to us. And one of these things is trying to deal with what happens when the world goes bankrupt, the central bank, like the Federal Reserve, gets out of control, and there's a bankruptcy, financial bankruptcy throughout the world now, and that opens up the doors to mass migrations. It's happened before in history, but this one has, in my estimation, has been planned. It's skillful, and right now the American people are being dragged into it because it seems like they're getting most of the bills. So this is the reason I think that this is very important of what's going on, Daniel. And what do you think they're going to do with this $3.5 billion? Do you think it'll be up to much good for the United States?
Yeah, I mean, the story is making its way through the conservative media in the U.S. and Zero Hedge picked up on it. And we saw it this morning on Zero Hedge. And what it is, as you say, $3.5 billion in the almost $100 billion foreign aid, foreign war bill that's going to the State Department's Migration and Refugee Assistance Program. Now, that doesn't directly invite people to the U.S., but I think the reason why it really struck a chord among conservatives and probably some non-conservatives is a sense of betrayal. In that Speaker Johnson, he swore that he would never bring this funding bill to the floor without having language in it about securing our borders. And not only was there not a word about securing our borders, there's $300 million for border guards in Ukraine. But on top of all that, there's actually $3.5 billion that can well be used to help settle refugees in the United States. So I think it's that sense of betrayal, Dr. Paul, that has got people so angry at Speaker Johnson over this.
You know, and I see this as being a very historic event in the sense that things are changing rapidly, and many have written about what they anticipate. not everybody looks at it the way I think it's come up, and it is. It's a moral and financial bankruptcy, and it has engulfed the world. And we were the major participant in building this, building it, because since World War II, we had become the empire. And we had the most money and the most weaponry, and we still are very, very wealthy. But our system is not so secure anymore. The monetary system is so shaky, and we're getting into more trouble with our, you know, foreign policy system. But it is major. And when you see these things, it's good that we talk about it. But to go off on a tangent and saying, well, this particular piece of legislation, this particular $1 trillion we're going to spend, this is the whole issue. It's much bigger than that. It's the present bankruptcy, the moral bankruptcy, the rejection of the whole nature of what a secure society should look like. And this is the reason it's a threat to us. And ultimately, you know, it's a threat to our liberties. I think I talk a lot about the different events that are bad, but ultimately the real answer and the real explanation is the rejection of personal liberty, which we were the best champions of in the world at one time. And it was our Constitution and what America used to stand for that brought us here. But like so many cultures and empires, they live beyond their means. And right now, that's what's happening. And these problems that we face, they're going to keep coming as long as we keep printing the money. It's amazing to me that they keep coming. And we say nothing. Oh, how much you need? And then we give them trillions of dollars, and they say, "Oh, we'll give you some, behind the door there. We'll give you another couple trillion, but we won't tell anybody. This will be secret." So it's amazing. It continues because there is a tremendous false trust in the stability of what we have, and that America will always, you know, come in because they will print the money, and they don't have a firm grasp. They've lost their desire, at least the large number of people who are in our government. They don't have this strong burning desire on what their goals ought to be. And the political leaders at the founding of this country, they knew specifically what their goals were.
Well, I think the one thing this $3.5 billion highlights is the deep corruption of the government. As you just mentioned, you know, Americans are forced to pay for a foreign policy that creates millions of refugees overseas, you know, bombing Iraq, the unrest in the Middle East. We're forced to pay for those policies that create refugees, and then we're taxed again to pay for the refugees that our policies has created. You know, it's we pay a second time for the problems created by Washington. And I think it's this deep corruption that it's not only about immigration. All people on the right wing will say it's just immigration, but there's something deeper. Our policy creates refugees, whether it's in our policy toward Venezuela, the sanctions that create economic conditions by their design that create refugees, or our backing one side and the other in the Middle East to create refugees. So you have to look at the real core of the problem, which is our foreign policy, I think.
But, you know, this also offers an opportunity for the world planners who either deny in their own minds, or they want to ignore that the current system, the way it's run. So they create these monstrosities like ESG and DEI and set up all the rules. And it is just a monstrous of a thing. It's the opposite of liberty. It means the government's going to tell us every single thing, everybody who gets hired and what opinions are. And you know, the whole thing. Pretty soon they'll be monitoring our speech, you know, this way. So, but those are rules written down. So they don't give up and say, well, this might not be going so well, but we just need better managers. We need to make sure people follow the rules when it comes to immigration. Immigration has to be controlled, and we will control it, and we will have these regulations. Same way with universities. Yeah, we're having trouble in our university, but we better work harder at making sure ESG and DEI are available, and they understand these programs, so we need more money and more bureaucrats to teach people that, not realizing that the whole system is rotting away, and it's the problem. And yet they do this, and that has been developing for 20 or 30 years, but the last 10 years is really how these economic and social planning things have become worldwide and are built into our economic system, and it really has underlined the principles of capitalism.
Well, we're ready to move on to the next topic we want to discuss, because it is also about money. And as the New York Times reported last week, before the money was even approved for Ukraine, the U.S. government had secretly shipped new long-range missiles to Ukraine, ATACMS, they're called. They were already there waiting to be used. And it turns out that today or yesterday, the ATACMS were used. The Ukrainians launched, I believe, 10 ATACMS against Crimea, and the Russians intercepted six of them. So they were promptly shot down. So here we're sending missiles over there. They're getting shot down. We're building more missiles. They're getting shot down. It's like what my friend Chuck Spinney calls a self-licking ice cream cone. You know, that's what it seems that's happening over there.
You know, and this is an article I was looking at from Reuters. And they use words that sounds conspiratorial. It says Washington secretly shipped the long-term missiles to Kiev as part of a $300 billion military. So, you know, it's out there. It's available there. But, you know, if it was decent, doing something good and decent, and the American people had to understand their obligations, you know, they wouldn't have to do it secretly. Of course, it's a dumb policy. It violates our Constitution. It won't work. It's going to make things worse. And that's the real reason why they must know this. So that's why they have to do things secretly. But I don't think you can hide this. I don't think you can hide the moral bankruptcy nor the financial bankruptcies, because it's all around us right now. It's the corruption that we see, and then all the financial problems are just building every day. The one reason they're getting away with it is that the bottom half are the ones who suffer the most, and they have to pay essentially the most of the inflation tax, dilute the value of the money, pretend we're taking care of them, make all the promises to the world, war and welfare. And people say, well, it's the best we can do. What else? You can't say, well, we have to stop that. That's the only thing we have left. So just send us more money. And that will come to an end, but it isn't going to be because we have great, wise people taking charge of things. It's going to be because it's going to self-destruct, and that's why we better prepare for it.
And, you know, it's been reported over and over in the media, and even the administration doesn't believe that this money will help Ukraine win the war. They believe that it's unwinnable. All it will do is postpone the inevitable, and we talked about that yesterday. So here we're spending billions of dollars and thousands and thousands of lives. But, you know, it's all good news for the military industrial complex, because you shoot one down, you get to build another one. It's a it's really a scam, I think, Dr. Paul, this whole thing.
Very good. And Daniel, I think I'm about ready to go on to the next item that we had talked about a little bit. And
okay.
This comes from Anti-War, one of our favorite websites. And the headline there that we wanted to, you know, enhance and let people get a sense of what's going on. It says bipartisan bill would create anti-Semitism monitors at college campuses. Now, my first impression is, you know, I can't remember ever knowing somebody that I say, oh, he's an anti-Semite. I'm sure they're around, and people, and there's books written about it. But as far as it being, you know, a major issue that it's getting the total attention, especially by many conservatives. There's the few libertarians there. They're speaking out and trying to make sense out of this. But the bipartisan bill would create, maybe Daniel's going to tell us what the answer is. Anti-Semitism monitors at college campuses. Oh, it's more of that sorting out and planning, more ESG. We just need to do more of that. But we'll monitor. Boy, if you're an anti-Semite, you don't get in here. Of course, my simple answer to all this, but I believe in it strongly, it's when you have problems like this, the question you should ask is, who owns the property? Who owns the school? Who owns the college? Who owns the medical school? All these things, because it's the owner that has the responsibility. But in a system of interventionism and fascism and corporatism, everything is owned by the people. everybody and nobody. Nobody's responsible. So it's the seeds that are planted then for the need for radical, democracy, where you just get, all we have to do is to get 51%, and we can do whatever we want to the 49%. So I get so sick and tired of those people talking about what we have to do is save democracy. And nobody ever asks them, where do you get this authority? What's the opinion of the founders about democracy? So this is it. But this whole idea of anti-Semitism, if you do have problems like that, you go to the owners. But you say, well, the government owns them. Yeah, most of them, but that isn't the way it was all the time in our early history. That isn't what it was happening. Most great colleges and hospitals were started by churches and private industry. So this is the problem. So when the ownership becomes so nebulous, you're not going to find an answer. Or what you're going to do is you're going to send up an anti-Semitic monitor, and they will monitor thing, and everything will be peaceful.
Yeah, it's really a chilling attack on the First Amendment and on free speech. And the bill was introduced by a Republican, Mike Lawler, out of New York, and a Democrat, Richie Torres, out of New York. And essentially what it's going to do is to tell every college campus that receives federal money that you must appoint an anti-Semitism monitor, or many anti-Semitism monitors, to roam around your campus, I guess, rooting it out or looking for it or punishing it. Who knows? But it's a chilling attack on free speech. And in fact, the Rules Committee had a hearing on it yesterday. And Gerald Nadler, who's the Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, happens to be a Jewish American from New York. And he stood up bravely in opposition. He's not someone who likes anti-Semitism at all. But he said, this is terrible. This is an attack on free speech, forcing these monitors. And I think it's sort of showing the growing movement toward silencing speech that people don't want to hear. And it's a terrible move. I mean, as the opposition to U.S. policy in the Middle East is growing, the opposition to U.S. policy toward Israel, which is to give it money and a blank check to do what it wants, as that opposition grows, they don't like the policy, but the elites, instead of changing the policy, they want to outlaw opposition to the policy, which is what totalitarians do.
The placing of people into a group always makes me nervous. I know it's natural and necessary, and even in our history, it was required to think about groups. And I've come. My bottom line is that's a dangerous thing to do, because you shouldn't gain benefits nor be punished because you belong to a certain group. The most important thing is you're an individual, and we all have equal rights. That's it. But as soon as you say that, well, this one group of people, they've been punished. So instead of just saying, well, they need their freedom, we say, we must make up for it. And now they're talking about making up for the abuse of liberty of the last 200 or 300 years. It just doesn't make any sense. But then there's the benefits. They want to pass out the benefits. So that galvanizes people to organize and have their lobbyists come. So if business people do it, the whole works. It's the whole idea to come as a group. So, but you can't punish people because they belong to a group, and you can't pass out benefits because they belong to a group, and this is the reason why it's so important. And I've made an effort on my own part about emphasizing the importance of individual liberty and the responsibility of being responsible for all that we do. But once we defer to the government, and the government is there to take care of us, they don't say, well, yeah, we have to have government because we have to have somebody arbitrate to make sure liberty isn't being trampled. Now, Daniel, the way he was talking, you better be looking here. So these anti-Semitism bills may be a trampling of rights. They come out and they point to something. So they go and they invent something to stop something that probably doesn't even really exist by taking away more liberty from all the other people. So anybody that wants a special privilege, and there's plenty still going on, if they want some special benefits, and because they belong to a group, And even though they might be 1 or 2 or 3% of the population, if they're successful on playing on this, what they have to do, if they get what they want, they get it by taking liberty away from somebody else. It doesn't come out of the air. They want special things and they want to be taken care of. So somebody has to pay for this. This is why it's so important to think that if you're interested in liberty, you have to think about the individual is the person that qualifies for liberty, not just a group of people that will manipulate the system and concoct all kinds of schemes for why they get special benefits.
Well, I think, you know, if the fact of the matter is these protests across campuses are thankfully, they're not singling out Jewish people. And in fact, there are so many videos available of Jewish people participating, even holding a Shabbat dinner, a Seder dinner, along with the protesters. But if you only listen to the commentators on the right, you'd think that a Holocaust was brewing. Thank God that's not the case. But they're trying to create the atmosphere that these kids are getting attacked, and thank God they're not, because what they don't want to hear is the legitimate claims that the protesters are making, which is that we don't want our money going to what's happening in Gaza right now. And they don't want that argument to happen. And so they're making a straw man argument that there's a bunch of anti-Semitism, which thankfully is not the case. People aren't getting beaten up. And, you know, as our friend Jonathan Turley would say, the solution to even ugly speech is not forbidding it, but it's more speech. So if someone is saying something ugly, we have to have the ability to confront them, and maybe you'll change their mind. Maybe they say something ugly, they don't realize how ugly it is. So the solution is always more speech, not less.
You know, and some people will say, we're overreacting. Why do you guys worry so much about things? It hasn't really happened. There's just a few bad actors out there. But if you think about it, all they have to do is open up their eyes and ears and observe what went on during the COVID episode. And it's still going on. They haven't quit, using your fear tactics about viruses and invasions by the foreigners coming to invade us. That is their tool that they use. But there were so many examples of punishing people because they spoke out and had a different opinion about the medical care of people who supposedly they were positive for this horrible disease that's coming. But it turns out that the science was all on the part of the people that got punished. So this is why people should wake up, because I tell you what, at the rate we're going here, it will get much worse, because we're going to get a lot poorer. But this is something I think that we have to pay attention to, because we see it around us. If you say, I'm not worried about it, it's a little bit, it's just a few people and they haven't knocked on my door yet. That's a callous, careless attitude to have, because we better be cautious about what's happening.
All right, Dr. Paul, I'm going to sign off. I'm not going to torture anyone any longer with my voice. I apologize again. I'm still trying to get over this cold. But thanks to everyone who's tuned in to the show, and hope to see you again. Dr. Paul, over to you.
Very good, Daniel, and thank you very much. And I, too, want to make sure our viewers know how much we appreciate their support, because it's a message that we strongly believe in. And we feel good about the number of people who do join us, but we still have a long way to go in order to change people's opinion. The one thing that is reassuring to us is the fact that it's well known that, you know, you do not have to set a goal, which is difficult to achieve, that, boy, if we had only 51% of the people voting the right way, we could have, you know, a good society again. Well, it doesn't work that way. Even our revolution was supported by people under 10% of the people. Some people say 7, 8, 9% of the people were in support of the revolution, but they were leaders, and they were the ones that did the pamphleteering and the speaking and the explanation, and they knew history. That what has impressed me so much is how well they knew history, and it wasn't like, you know, liberty and the principles of liberty are just a recent couple hundred years. It's been known for a long time what good and evil exists, and the good part is that we do want our liberty and we do want the responsibility. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.